Hello and welcome to Ditching Hourly. I'm Jonathan Stark, and today I am joined by author, speaker, and entrepreneur Ryan Berman. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. How you doing?
Great to have you. I'm great.
Good. I know the show's called Ditching Hourly. I'm looking forward to ditching this week. Maybe that's a tell that we're recording this on a Friday, but we're so close to the weekend. I'm ready.
TGIF, exactly. Cool. Okay, so do you call the company Courageous Brands? Is that your company?
Yeah, I call it Courageous. If we want to get like on the record, consultancy, like a special forces consultancy that helps companies figure out their special. Mm-hmm. I've found myself saying that. The swifter answer is just change consultancy. Anywhere where change needs to happen, if you need to like get out of your own way, get unstuck, we get brought in, my little teams, these little rogue teams, to help basically companies get clear again, build belief, sometimes have really brutally hard but necessary conversations. You know, anywhere where courage is needed is we're swooping in. Pretty fun gig, to be honest.
Yeah, it sounds great, actually. So we were introduced by a mutual friend, and I was immediately attracted to that word courageous because I find it coming up a lot in my work when I'm coaching folks and I'm giving them suggestions like, oh, you know, given the situation, I would advise that you do this, that, or the other. You know, it could be change a headline on your website. It could be start a podcast. It could be start streaming on YouTube. It depends on the situation, but there's usually some sort of tactic that I'll recommend based on our overall objectives and strategy. And it's not always, but a lot of times I'll get a surprising amount of pushback based on what appears to be a fear reaction. And the reason I like the word courageous is because, you know, if you look it up in the dictionary, it's different than brave. Brave is like lack of fear. And I don't think that's a reasonable goal for people to have. I think a more reasonable goal is to be courageous, which is to act in the face of fear. So it's like, fine, feel the fear, but do the thing anyway. So when I saw that was like your word, I was like, we have to talk.
Yeah. And obviously I feel very strongly about the word, and I'm glad you went where you went. Like, yeah, we're really interesting creatures, aren't we? Like, mm-hmm. I think we're tired a lot. We don't like change. It's like, oh, it took me all this time to get to where I am now. And like for those of you, I'm sure there's like a big part of your audience that's like very skeptical of marketers and marketing, but yeah. Our mantra is your future is safe with change.
And that's great. Yeah.
Safe is unsafe basically. And like, nobody wants to hear it. Nobody wants to like put in the extra time. So even when you're like, hey, change a headline, here's why, pushback shows up. Mm-hmm. But if you don't do it, you're kind of a sitting duck. And, as you perfectly mentioned, I had a very visceral negative reaction actually to the dictionary definition of courage when I first saw it. Mm-hmm. This was back, well, I'm sure this wasn't the first time I saw it, but the first time I really studied it was in 2016. And the definition was the ability to do something that frightens one. I'm like, who wants to do that? Like, I don't want to do that. Like, I'm out on doing that. And let alone do that at work. Like, who wants to do frightening things at work? But the more I kind of picked and probed, I was like, I wonder if I could actually come up with a better definition, like a utilitarian definition of courage. And so for 6 months, the audience is going to learn a lot about me. You know, I see myself as a compensated observationalist. And so for 6 months, I just interviewed all these people. That's funny. and tried to understand, could I come up with a better definition of courage? And you're right, there's this famous proverb that fear and courage are brothers. You don't get to courage if you don't address the fear, but most of us suppress it. Mm-hmm. So that's actually where my journey with the word started, was, all right, there's this relationship between the two. So can I drop the definition we use for courage?
Yeah, sure.
All right, cool. So, like, we see it as sort of three levers. It's knowledge plus faith plus action equals courage. And you need all three for it to be a courageous act. So, how often in your career or life have you known the right thing to do with the knowledge piece? The data suggests it, your experience suggests it. You feel it's the right move. That's the faith piece. That might be experience as well. And then you do nothing about it. You take no action, right? And so the irony is two of three in any direction is encourage. Knowledge and faith without action is paralysis, right? You're stuck. Faith in action without knowledge is reckless.
Yeah, I agree with
Hey, how
that.
about we get a little data maybe, right? A little bit maybe. And then knowledge and action without faith. If you're just going through the motions and you're numb on the inside, I'm talking to you, person who's been at a company for 16 years and you've stopped growing and you're just numb. Knowledge and action without faith is status quo, is
Yeah,
safe
no risk.
and no risk. There's no, that's not courageous. That's something else.
Right. Well, let's talk about risk for a second, because in my experience, a lot of the when I get pushback on, like, change a headline on your homepage, and people are like, I can't do that. And I'll say, like, well, why not? And they'll say, well, because my existing they'll say something like, my existing clients will wonder if I'm still oriented around serving them or whatever. And I'll say, do you really think your existing clients are go visiting your website? And they'll say, no. And I'll say, like, okay, what's the real problem? Like, well, I don't want to limit my opportunities by getting more specific in my headline. And we just keep, and just like every single one of them, you can just completely nuke, like every objection, you completely nuke. And it really boils down to, like, fear of change. And what's weird about that to me is, like, what do you think is going to happen? Like, what, and there's no answer, right? It's just your lizard brain feeling like, I don't want to stand out from the crowd, because when there were saber-toothed tigers, that would almost surely get me killed. But there are no saber-toothed tigers, and it's just a headline on your website. And, like, where, this fear, I guess the point I'm making is, it's wild to me how your rational brain is almost, like, powerless to defeat this, like, old brain, lizard brain, irrational fear. Do you see the same
So I
thing, and
just
how you
have,
fight that?
not only do I see the same thing, I feel like I've stumbled into the aha moment and my sole goal of what success looks like today on the podcast. You ready?
Yeah, hit me.
Okay. I think the goal, the light bulb moment is, let's say you've got 5,000 skeptical, heard everything, software engineers, smarter than 99% of the population listening right now. Arms are crossed, right? Like, okay, dude. Okay, courage, dude. Like, convince me of something different. And to your point, 90% of them, that the conversation you just shared is that conversation. They don't get it. Why do I have to change anything? I don't want to limit my opportunities. And I think the aha moment is, call it what you want if you hate marketing, but your ability to tell your story and differentiate your story and design a life and a story that only attracts the actual people you want to spend your energy and time with is the sole focus of exceptional marketing. So when you're making these requests, you're asking them to get more specific. With, to get more clear, that's, if you don't like marketing, fine. Let's call it storytelling.
Yeah.
To me, when we talk about courageous, I'm also telling the world who I'm not for, right?
Yeah.
Who's not going to call me? All the people that are like, just want to play it safe. Good. I don't want to spend any of my energy and time, right, on the planet working with people that do not want to address change. And I'm not saying change is easy. Change is not easy. Change is hard. But the hardships that come from not changing are far harder. And so, I think maybe part of it is context, right? Like, hey, you're not the only one fighting me on this. Thousands of others are. By the way, that's your competition. How about we continue to change as knowing that they're going to get left behind? context is
right.
Maybe the takeaway.
Yeah. So I have so many thoughts to add to that. So like resisting change ends in tragedy. It's a trap. When I see someone just stuck and stuck and stuck, or they come to me and they say, oh, I've had a whale client for 13 years. And I'm like, it's tragic. It ends up in this boil the frog type of scenario where it's too late to do anything about it. Maybe it's never too late, but it's just so tragic that years have gone by in this paralysis, this fear-based paralysis of standing out from the crowd, being the one and only instead of just one of many. And just like, it's not completely wasting that time, but it just kills me when people do that. So that's one thing. Another thing is that you actually said my business philosophy in a different way. Like my driving business philosophy is help people you like get what they want. And implied in that is
I love that you
don't help people you don't like, and you can identify like however you want. But you were talking about spending your time, you know, you don't want to spend your life spending time with people who don't really want to change, or, you know, as Trip Lanier would say, they're just dicking around. Or, you know, you find that small group of people who are ready to dance with the fear, as Seth Godin says, and make change happen and make the world a better place. Those are your people. And if you're not like that, that's fine. Go to, you know, you can work with someone else or don't work with anyone. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's 340 million people just in this country. I don't need to be best friends with all of them. while I can't choose my family, tricky arena. If I can put my little lion logo out into the world, I've got a little cat signal, I call it, instead of the bat signal. it should attract the right type of people that are like-minded, that share my values, that believe that it's possible to change and that there's a willingness to change. By the way, I absolutely love the word willing. It might be my favorite word, even more than courage. Because willing means when you're open-minded, which is tough because we're stubborn, skeptical creatures. Mm-hmm. Especially when I'm going in with my little rogue teams at a high level and like the CEO, I'm like, here's all the reasons we shouldn't work together. Number one, the egos and the silos and the organizational hierarchy. We're never going to be able to make change because everybody thinks they know everything. You're not even open to learning. Mm-hmm. So I love people that are willing, that are open-minded. Like, I'm willing to hear this person out. And then the other side of willing, the double entendre of willing, it's like, once a decision has been made, you're going to grit it out. We're going to will it through. We're going to make it happen. And change is hard, right? So you kind of need to will it through to make something new happen. You know, where did all this come from for me? A lot of, just to be really clear, I got to spend 3 years shutting up and having lunch with really interesting people. I called it my listening lap with the brave, the bullish, and the brainiac. Mm-hmm. And got to sit with like astronauts and Navy SEALs and tornado chasers and then leaders at Google and Apple and Amazon and Harvard. And then on the brainiac side, Cambridge PhDs, people that study the brain. And the reason I feel I can confidently teach companies to take action, you know, courageous action, is because of that listening lap. And all that ended up in my book, shameless plug time, I guess, yeah. Return on Courage, right? And so like that, by the way, I'm still scared every day because my business is changing. And I find myself in the coaching world now for the first time. Like that wasn't the plan. Mm-hmm. So I can feel my own fear and I'm not afraid of it. It's just a data point that's telling me I'm exactly where I should be. It doesn't mean I'm not scared. I'm like terrified still. I'm just trusting everything I've learned, right? That this is exactly the spot I'm supposed to be.
Mm. Yes. So there's so many things to talk about here. There's a Seth Godin thing from Icarus Deception I want to make sure we get to. And there's also Stephen Pressfield's Resistance. And the you know, you use the word terror. I mean, I get what you're saying, but it's not like a lion is chasing you. you know, it's like, I get what you mean, right? You're being humble and you're saying like, oh, you know, I don't know if this is going to work. I'm taking risks. But they're not existential risks, I assume. I mean, you know, you're not on the battlefield, right? And so like no one listening is on the battlefield, most likely, maybe some exceptions, but that's not the kind of, that's not the kind of thing that I encounter with my students. Anyway, the thing I encounter with my students often is Stephen Pressfield's kind of fear of the resistance, which is procrastination and doubt and imposter syndrome. And, you know, who am I to do something like this? And this, I don't want to say status quo again, but it's like this, you know, what got me here will get me to the next level kind of thinking like, oh, if I just do this harder, I'll have a bigger impact. And they end up stuck because they took a risk, maybe, you know, for a freelancer, it'd be something like they took a big risk quitting their job with like no notice. They just like, take this job and shove it. I'm out of here. This boss is a jerk. I was, you know, tying my shoes this morning, getting ready for work, and I just broke down in tears. I can't take it anymore. Quit. It's a very courageous act. It's, you know, scary. It's risky. It could be terrifying. I think it's an overuse of the word, though. I think it's not fair to call it that. You know, I'm not the, you know, not to be argumentative, but it's like they did the thing and then it worked. They're like, oh my God, I got a client. And, you know, for 2 years, they get clients, and, you know, they get by. And then 2 years later, they're stuck again. And now they're trapped. Instead of being trapped at this employment job, they're trapped in their own job without a boss, where they're super dependent on like one or two whale clients. And now they have a new need to take another risk. And for whatever reason, there's not enough pain pushing them out of it. You know, so they're doing okay. They're working for themselves and they're not being like harassed by their boss or whatever. So it's kind of like really easy to stay status quo. And they forget that they did take a big risk before and it worked out. And like the thing that they need to remember, I think, is to like, okay, now take another one and get to the next place. Make your life better. Like, you know, you said, work with people, you know, get really clear about who you don't want to work with, for example, and then update your story. If you don't want to call it your marketing, update your story on your website and say like, okay, here's who I don't want to work with. And here's who I do want to work with. And here's what I want to do. And here's the value I should be able to provide to people like this. And get more specific. And it's like people don't believe it, but it's like magic. They think, oh, if I make my focus smaller, then I'm going to have fewer leads. But the exact opposite happens. If you get more specific and make your focus smaller, your opportunities get bigger. It seems like a paradox, but it happens like every time. Not every single time, but it happens all the time.
Right. I totally agree with about 95% of that.
Give me the 5%.
And of course, right. Of course you want the 5%, right? But like, yeah, it makes the problem, as you've perfectly kind of state, you're showing, and I'll tell it, is that we're so focused on the fear versus focusing on the thing we're supposed to be focusing on.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Which is getting clear on the offering.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say this. I think that the example you gave of the guy or girl who's like, I'm crying, this boss sucks, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
Is a good metaphor to the last 500 days for all of us. And I think that that was a resilient mindset more than a courageous mindset. What I mean by that is, it's like, whether you like it or not, like, you don't get to decide if change is happening. Change is happening, full stop, right? Like, fact, the world will continue on.
The river is flowing.
Right? It's flowing. It's happening.
Yes.
So you can right? Or, you know, I'm in San Diego. Better metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Water metaphor. The waves are happening. The next wave is coming. You see it coming. Maybe it's the right wave for you. Maybe it isn't. You gotta pick a wave. You can't ride the same wave. The next wave is coming. But if you're on a shitty wave with a boss, and you just tolerated them,
mm-hmm.
and it's just you're getting pummeled in the face by this wave of a boss. Just like we've been pummeled in the face by a wave of a pandemic. Not a single one of us asked for it. We had to figure it out. This is an example of change driving us. That is an act of resilience.
So you're saying it's reactive?
Correct.
Okay. That's fair.
It's reactive. That's fair. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, courage is when you drive change. If resilience is change driving you and how you respond to that, courage is proactive. It is you driving that change, right? Change is happening. You drive it. It drives you. I'm not saying one is better than the other. You know what? Because you can make a case. You'll never, ever work for that asshole boss again. So change driving you, maybe not so bad. I call it in the book a negative blessing. I've had negative blessings. I've been fired before. That chip, like, I'm beyond grateful for it now. At the time, I was pissed. But now I'm like, oh my gosh, without that moment, I might be stuck at that company still. I needed something to short circuit me out of that life. And now I'm very conscious and deliberate on when I'm hitting the gas and I'm being proactive, where I want to drive change, right? And get really, really specific. Now let me get back to the 5%. I know you probably have a lot on this. So here's the only part that I'm like, okay, maybe, maybe not. Like, maybe it is terror. So we have made a massive mistake as human beings. Like, we have not evolved that much. The way our body works, the central nervous system, you know this, but like it's as if we're still cavemen and cavewomen. Mm-hmm. And so when dopamine hits our body, it was a great system when we were cavemen and cavewomen, and tigers were really chasing us, or bears were chasing us, and the dopamine hit the right part of the body and it saved our lives. Like, that exact same process happens when we're sitting in traffic now. Pissed, or a boss bites our head off. Nicholas Alp, Cambridge PhD, he was my brain Sherpa. He really dumbed down what was going on in the brain. And he describes our brains like a reverse onion. And it's that shit that happened to you in high school, or that boss snapping your head off, it's still there. And we've come up with no strategies to manage our fear. So we just bury it. And we think just because technology has advanced that we've advanced, so great. My smartwatch can tell me how many beats per minute my heart's racing, but has no data whatsoever as to why my heart is trying to escape my chest. Right? That's, to me, that's the problem. And so I actually think until we consciously have to acknowledge that we're not dry, or our bodies are not Teslas, we're still like horses. We're still in one horsepower. Mm. Right? And we have to come up with ways to short circuit ourselves, to acknowledge our body is doing what it's supposed to be doing. Our central nervous system, right? It's right there at the core of you, is a operating system designed for your nervousness. It's designed to keep you safe. It's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. It's telling you signals of where you're afraid, where you're nervous, but you don't have to listen to it all the time. You shouldn't listen. I acknowledge you, central nervous system. Nobody does this, by the way. Hey, I acknowledge you, central nervous system, and now I'm going to do something different. That's the work we need to do.
I love that. Like, that, I think the time we chatted a couple of weeks ago, and that, I never thought of, like, I thought of central nervous system as like one term, but it's got the word nervous right in it. Like, I don't want people to miss it. It's like central nervous system. It's there to make you nervous. And I just absolutely never noticed that before, and I love it. And here's a story that pops into my mind talking about that. And you're a speaker. I've trod the boards plenty of times too. And that feeling that you get, that people typically frame as stage fright, and I think it's a mistake to try and stop stage fright. I think the real move is to reframe it as excitement. And that you're excited, and I don't even want to use the word anxious, but you're getting into the zone, and you're going to perform, right? I mean, I've got a music performance background. The butterflies never go away, but I did stop thinking of them as like, a real performer wouldn't have these butterflies. A real performer would go out there and just be confident at all times, and they would, you know, but I just reframed it as like, this is how you're supposed to feel. before performance. And that's what brings out, that's what makes that feeling. Without that feeling, the performance would be limp. It would just be, it would be nothing. You wouldn't be engaged. You wouldn't be, you know, you're, it's almost like you're tripping. It's like your senses expand. It's really good. It's good. So if you reframe it as good and you don't reframe it as fear or like, I'm terrible at this because I'm feeling this way, it's like, no, your central nervous system is producing this sensation, and it should, but keep going. You know, it's, you know, if you frame, I mean, is that, am I just totally off base? It's not, this is only based on my experience, not like brain science, but that's how I feel about it.
The joys of doing this as audio is I'm nodding my head, you know, you can't see the nodding, right? But so that's all it is. And I would even say, and again, this is the story guy in me, instead of reframing, you have to short circuit yourself. And I don't know if you study any Jonah Berger, but he talks about, you know, negative emotion versus positive emotion and which sticks. So like short circuit yourself. I love the example you gave, right? It's not that you can be, you need, it's okay to be, have stage fright, but short circuit yourself and channel that and turn it into excitement. And what I've also, like, the other thing that I've learned when I take, you know, a stage is this is the excitement comes not because I'm trying to trick myself, and I'm not saying that's what you were saying. Mm-hmm. It's because I so believe in the cause. I so believe in my little rally cry and my why, that if 95% of the population, the experts suggest, are afraid, you know, they're the freeze or flight people, right? 95% of the people of the world are the preservation people, and only 5% of people are the liberation people, right? 95% are warriors, 5% are warriors, and I can help you be a warrior, and you already know that your competition is going to be stuck. Like, oh my God, I can wake up every day of my life and help people short circuit themselves. And, you know, like I talk about this a lot, like if I can help you develop a central courage system to combat your central nervous system, I'm like, oh my, tell me where to sign up.
Yeah.
I'm in every day.
Yeah.
So like, to me, I'm already excited now. It's not like, because my cause, my true purpose is clear. So we're back to clarity. Right. Yeah. So for you person listening, like, I think it comes back to like, oh shit, if I'm having this problem, I wonder if you felt this way. That a lot of people probably have this problem. What if I could provide the remedy? What a great place to be when you can get there.
So here's a nuance inside of that that I think is strongly related and maybe would be persuasive to the listener. The difference in having, I don't know if it's a chicken or egg thing. Maybe they're just two sides of the same coin. But having a mission, right, and being all in for the audience is something that for me dramatically increased my courage, if you want to put it like that. So showing up, it reduces imposter syndrome, it reduces perfectionism, procrastination, it increases the degree to which I can show up every single day and have the energy to do that and the discipline to do that. Is that it's not about, hey everybody, look at how cool and smart and awesome I am, let me tell you how you can give me your money, which I think is it's almost like that pitch feeling when you go into a sales meeting, if you're going to pitch to the buyer and you're trying to convince them to hire you, it's that there's something there that's the same mentality that keeps people trapped and actually more scared. And because it's a self-centered or self-centric view of the universe. And if you switch that around to an other-centric, you know, so like you're on a mission to help other people in this particular way, it makes all of that stuff so much easier. Everything from having a sales interview with somebody to walking on stage and genuinely trying to help the audience and not worrying about if your hair is perfect or your fly is down or if you're going to forget one of your bullet points. That stuff will happen, but it doesn't matter because you're there to help the audience get to this, to see things in a new way, to turn a light bulb on, to help them transform into a better version of themselves. And it, you know, I don't know if that's where your central courage system comes from, but I have certainly observed, in people who are real introverts in at least one sense of the word, the shy type of introvert, not the reticent type. There's two different kinds. But if you're more of a shy person, I've observed many times people who are inherently shy, they would just be silent at a party for the entire time. But they get up on stage and they light up because it's not about them. It's not about social awkwardness or anything. It's about producing action in the audience, and that's all they're there for. And they use every trick in the book that they are in possession of to like make that happen. And they turn into, you know, it's like a metamorphosis almost. Anyways, I don't know. How does any of that tie into your central courage system?
I mean, almost all of it, right? Because where you started was, it isn't about me, right? I mean, look, I'm a classic storyteller 101. Like, I went on my journey. I was different when I went in, and I came out differently. And I like the new me better than the old me. I like what I was clear on who I was, and I had purpose. Yesterday, I had to be up in L.A., and I spoke to like the most, the sharks. I spoke to like sports agents and Jerry Maguire. So imagine like me, jumping into that room.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, arms were crossed, skeptical right. People were there.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about me, and it wasn't about my fear of like, how do I win over? Right. Like mm-hmm. The last thing this group needs is a competitive advantage. They're sharks.
Right.
And you are, I already know because I've done the work that even if I went over one of them, right? Even if like, hey, I actually remember saying near the beginning, hey, nobody, like the last thing I thought as a kid, like when I grew up, I want to be a motivational speaker, says nobody. Mm-hmm. Like I, that wasn't the plan. But once I went and talked to all these amazing people, I'm like, maybe there's one thing I say today that really inspires you and makes you think just a little bit differently about how you take on tomorrow. That's a win. That is a victory. So it, to me, like, I think you almost have to, we're back to that, like surrender, trying to be for everybody. Know your cause. No, it's not going to land with everybody, nor should it.
Right.
But find your people. And when you put your ether out into the world, usually what happens is it's a mirror and the right people come back.
Yeah. I've seen it so many times that it's like, it's hard to even try and describe the mechanics of it. It's like, just do it. You know, it's like, and then the next question is like,
yeah, but that frustration was, you know, remember you were there once too, probably just like I was.
Oh, 100%.
You know, but, I don't know why I'm even thinking about this now, but like the crazy thing. So when I was fired in New York by this executive creative director, I came out of advertising. So I came out of like, The bonkers Mad Men people were my bosses. Like I was at a 700 person agency, glory days, learned from some amazing people on how to tell stories. And in my seventh year at this company, new executive creative director comes in, fires me. I never worked with him on a project. I wasn't making that much money, so it felt personal. Mm-hmm. Life goes on, life happens, I'm pissed. I realized later, like, oh my God, thank goodness for that moment. I kid you not, about 3 years ago, the very same executive creative director reaches out to me and is like, I've been watching what you've been doing. It's amazing. Congratulations. Hey, I'm going to be in town. Can I pick your brain on something? And like, you can imagine me sitting here, like seeing this LinkedIn note, you know, no communication with this human since the day you let me go. And like my first response is the brain doing what it's supposed to do. I'm angry. I'm thrown back to that same little boy stuck in a 29-year-old body in New York City. And then it comes over me and I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is the universe is a funny, funny thing. We end up meeting and I kid you not, he was asking me about launching a product. And it was so like, just do it. Like for my response was yours, like, just do it. Like, I don't understand what's the holdup. And what I realized in the moment was for guys like you and me, because we've now gone to the mental gym and used that muscle, a lot, then it doesn't make it easier all the time, but it certainly makes it easier than somebody who is in such paralysis.
Yeah.
They're stuck. And I'm like, it's so easy to us. Like, you just have to like leap, and nobody can leap but the person, the actual person who has to leap. Yeah. And I was like, wow, this is just amazing. This is how we got here on this story.
Yeah, I know it doesn't work to just say, you're nervous? Well, don't be. I know it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But that's what it boils down to. I mean, like, you know, so that's why I have a coaching business, because I wouldn't have a coaching business if the whole instruction was just don't be nervous, just take the risk, just recognize that the risk is actually very small. You're risking almost nothing, you know, things like that. But yeah, I completely recognize that it needs to be a little bit more. You need to speak to the person in a way that's going to produce action. And that usually means getting to know the person a little bit and figuring out where the levers are, figuring out, you know, and then which ones to pull or push and how hard.
Yeah. And you know this too. And I'm learning this because I'm new in coaching. It's almost like, how do I serve up information in a way where they finally arrive at the destination? Like, I'm not going to convince you of anything. I may give you a piece of information that helps you convince yourself that it's finally time. And I think that's about as far as we can go, right? We're such fickle creatures. And even in the coaching side, in some ways, I know this sounds odd, but I'm actually trying to take the courage out of courage. Like, I'm trying to make it so easy for you to start when you're in the process. Like, hey, like you said, like, let's start with just you. Like, why are you wired the way you are? Like, do you really know your own personal core values? We spend all this time scrolling social media and other people. Have you done the work to scroll yourself? I am an absolute crazy person on understanding my own personal core values, right? And like, when you have them, it helps you decide like, oh yes, this is why you and I work already, right? You and I have not been best friends for a decade, but from the first time we spoke, it was so clear that like, you're thinking about the world, I'm thinking about the world. Like, we share a lot of the same values. And for some reason, if we didn't talk for 5 years and ended up at a conference, guess who we're going to have drinks with?
Yeah, you totally, and
I are
going to have
drinks, right? Yeah. I know it already. I know you do too.
Right. Yeah. It's like literally the second time we've talked ever. Right.
And it's easy.
And it's wild. Yeah. And I could list about a half a dozen other people who, you know, they're guys like us, but, and gals, but it means that they've been in the mental gym and they've made the flip. So, you know, it used to blow my mind more. It blows my mind less now, but it used to blow my mind when I would meet someone or someone would say, oh, yeah, I've been on your list for a while. And well, exactly what happened with us. I've been on your list for a while and there's this other guy. Have you heard of him? No, I never heard of him. So you guys should talk. Definitely. I'm positive you guys should talk. You'll hit it off. And like, they were right. And it's happened to me like 10 times where someone who's kind of discovered this like thing, there's like this thing. And they just, right. And they're like trying to figure out, they're like digging, like we're all digging at different spots, looking for the same treasure. But it's enough treasure forever. It's not like a thing to fight over. It's like, it's another reason why I never feel like I have somebody, if somebody said to me, who are your competitors? I would say, I don't have any. It's like,
yeah,
we're all on the same team. Like all the people that are saying the same stuff I'm saying, and this is, you know, in a different way, you're saying in a different way, like Blair Enns is saying, or Chris Doe, or whoever, or Rochelle, you know, it's like all of that stuff. It's like, we're all scratching away at the surface of this same problem and trying to get the treasure out to distribute it, you know? So there's something.
Well, I think do you feel this way? I feel like the treasure very simply is freedom.
Oh, hell yeah. Right.
Right. I mean, isn't that it? I mean, what else could it possibly be?
Right.
Or happiness, but really freedom brings happiness.
Yeah. I mean, let's get woo woo, right? For that's what we're going to do. So like when I was little, my friends and I had one particular friend who was very close with. I met him in nursery school. We're still friends now and I'm like 52. So, we used to get into like really deep conversations. We were nerds and musicians and like really into like trippy stuff. And, you know, things like even in junior high, things like what's the meaning of life and blah, blah, blah. And even back then, I would have said in my kind of maybe in a naive language, I would have said the purpose of life is to have fun. Like, that's the point. And as an adult, I would only change one word of that, and I would change fun to fulfillment. Because I would have said fulfillment back then, because that is what I meant. I didn't mean partying and hedonistic kind of fun. I meant, like, be happy. And it's kind of like, I don't know if you're a stoic person. I'm sort of on the sidelines watching that with interest. But it's very much like control the thing that you can control and do stuff that's going to fulfill you, make you feel stronger, and not do the stuff that drains you and makes you feel weaker, which is different than fear. Facing fear does not necessarily drain you. Working with clients who you don't like or don't really want to help, that drains you. So, you know, I feel like if the general purpose of life is like happiness, you call it different words. I don't think any of them are perfect, but like happiness or fulfillment or freedom or well-being is another one that I see thrown around. It's all like, you know, figure out what is going to make you feel fulfilled. That's my favorite one of the set, and go after that. And if you detect fear along the way, use that as a compass to definitely go do that thing.
Like, that's the love thing. That. Love it. I love that. And the fact that you can have that much awareness to go, hey, there's the fear. Oh shit. This I'm on the path, right? Because I don't know. That's what I don't have any clarity on that part. Like, how conscious are people really? Like, what percent of us are robots? And I think if you're a listener of this podcast, you're constantly okay auditing, you know, you're probably more conscious than the general public. I don't want to belittle the general public, but I really am curious, you know, of where's that line? Like, what percent are just kind of like, we're all cats following a little shiny light versus trying to understand where the light came from in the first place and why am I a cat? You know, I love deconstructing people and life and understanding why we do the things that we do. And I really liked your answers both on we do it to be fulfilled. And I'm definitely stealing that fear as a compass. It's a great, great, great thought.
I'm not sure if I invented that, so don't credit me with it, but
I'll credit you all everywhere I go.
Okay. So, but speaking of which, it might be a Seth Godinism, and it reminds me of something I mentioned earlier. I didn't get back to that also ties into your, like, you know, what percentage of the population is actively engaged in trying to understand their own core values and act in accordance with them, and then ultimately feel fulfilled and free and happy and all of those things. And it reminds me of the first time I read this was in The Icarus Deception by Seth Godin. It was like a mic drop moment when he talked about, there's two circles in the book, and it's like comfort zone and safety zone. And in the first diagram, like, it's like a Venn diagram, and they're like completely overlapping. So like the comfort zone and the safety zone are like on top of each other completely. And, you know, the subtitle is something like in times of stasis. So like when in times where things aren't changing that much, I don't know, maybe it's the 50s or whatever. If there ever was a time, if there was a time when things weren't changing that much, then a generation, you know, for 50 to 100 years, then a generation can grow up, and the safest thing to do is also the comfortable thing to do. Get a job, go to college, get a job, stay at the job for 30 years, retire, and get a boat and sail off into the sunset. And like, that's the safe thing to do and the comfortable thing to do. If that time ever existed, I'm not sure, but it definitely doesn't exist now. Now is, in my lifetime, this is for sure the most crazy, chaotic amount of change that I've ever gone through. And I went through the Carter administration and, you know, gas rationing and, you know, drills to like hide under your desk in case there was a nuclear bomb, you know, like when I was in elementary school. It's way more intense now, way more. And what that means for the two circles, the Venn diagram, is that the comfort zone and the safety zone no longer touch at all. There's no overlap. So if you're doing something comfortable, it's almost reckless. I suppose that's overstating it, but you're not doing the safe thing. The safe thing is to embrace change and do stuff that's not comfortable. And I don't mean push-ups in a Starbucks or like whatever that whole phase was. But if you have an objective or your mission or vision for the future, and you're like, yes, that is the way, that is the shining hill that we should all climb up. That is the goal, that would be a goal for at least my people, the people who I like, who I want to help them get what they want. It's like, that is a great goal. I don't know how we're going to get there. And I'm not going to do it by myself. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me give a little twist on it. You know, I think when you're a writer, you know, the words really matter. And I spend a lot of time looking at words and right. Are they the right words? Maybe this is a really good place to end too, by the way, but like only because it kind of puts a pin in everything we're talking about. So I struggled with embrace change. I think if you're listening to this show, if you've made it the 50 minutes that felt like 15,
right,
then it's not about embracing change. It's about creating the change.
Yeah. You know right? what? You're right. Mm-hmm. It's not, it's proactive.
Right. We're not, you know, I always talk about, I want to build and lead courage brands. Well, what's that? Right. You kind of get the idea just by the name, but like, I always say courage brands, and people can be brands, whether they like it or not, they are. Courage brands, they don't just embody change or embrace change, they create the change.
That's an like you said, point.
It's the proactive twist. And I don't like the word be bold. Be bold. I like act bold because we forget the action part. Like act bold. Don't just be bold. Like I'm bold, right? No, are you? Like, how are you going to create the change for yourself to go find that treasure that we're all looking for? That might be for you. The treasure for you might be, please let me not work for a person that doesn't believe in the same things or is a shitty boss, or please, I want to get paid what I believe I deserve, or please let me have flexibility in my life. And the only way to go down that path is to nuance, keep moving, keep tinkering, keep experimenting, block out the shit that doesn't matter. And there's a lot of them, a lot of people that don't matter, and keep pushing forward. One of my favorite lines, I'm curious if I should put this on my website. You'll know why in a minute, is, stop your bullshit and start your bold shift.
Definitely put it on. Definitely. Right.
It's, I'm like, is this really going to help me? I know it's true. I know it's true, but is it going to help me do what I need to do to help people? And I think we kind of all need to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's totally on brand. And if it scares you, that means you should do it.
Right.
Fabulous. Yes. This flew by. We should wrap though. So can you just take a minute and tell folks where they can find out more about what you're doing?
Yeah. So again, it's Ryan Berman. Easiest place to find me is ryanberman.com. If you like this topic and were curious to take the courage out of courage, go to returnoncourage.com. I never thought I'd be a dude with a method, just what the world needed. Was another guy with a method, but coming out of talking to all these really smart people, the book kind of holds your hand and walks you through, starting with yourself and your values, how to actually like make a courageous change without being absolutely terrified, to use the word you brought up earlier. Mm-hmm. So I would say even ryanberman.com or returnoncourage.com, and find me on LinkedIn. If you liked what we talked about, I'd love to, connect and hear your story.
Awesome. Well, great. It's been a pleasure talking again. I look forward to doing it again in the future. Thanks for joining us.
You got it, man. Happy weekend. Woo.
Okay. You too. See you, Ryan. All right. That's it for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark, and you've been listening to Ditching Hourly. See you next time.